Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. I care so much about this organization. So proud to be on the board of directors for over 20 years. I don't even know how long. And the difference, if you have a cat, if you care about cats in any way, if you've ever met a cat, the difference this organization has made, the executive director of the nonprofit Every Cat Health Foundation, Jackie Acciacola. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve Dale.
So tell me about the Every Cat Health Foundation.
We have been around as a nonprofit organization helping cats for almost 60 years now. And our mission is purely to advance feline health by supporting research for just that, feline health.
Yeah, and there are so many examples. So back in the day, I happen to know this story very well, feline leukemia. No one knew what it was. I mean, all that was known, and this is decades ago, but all that was known is cats were dying of this, what was called a feline lymph node disease. Feline leukemia is what they call a retrovirus without getting too technical, but no one understood that. No one understood the mechanism of the disease, how it was transmitted from cat to cat or anything. And we funded studies that, of course, now we fully understand feline leukemia and, in fact, have a vaccine for it. Fast forward the clock to just a couple of years ago, and I'll let you tell the story, if you'd like, about feline infectious peritonitis, or what's often termed FIP.
Well, I think, actually, you can tell this story more comprehensively than I can, Steve, because really, FIP was a death sentence for so many years, and Every Cat Health Foundation took a leap and supported a researcher who helped find a cure.
Yeah, cure. She said cure. So this disease, mostly affecting kittens, which made it and makes it all the more tragic, has been around for a very long time. And like I described, first people didn't quite understand. And for decades, the Every Cat Health Foundation have funded researchers from all over the world. And then one day, one of the primary researchers on the planet who greatly devoted his career for this at the University of California Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, Dr. Niels Petersen, who's now an emeritus professor, came to us and said, I think I got it. Here is a drug that was used for the human Ebola virus that really is just sitting on shelves. And here is why. And then he described the mechanism of action can work against this disease, immune-modulated disease caused by the feline coronavirus. And it turned out he was right. Cats, for the first time ever, kittens, were treated successfully with this disease that had previously been fatal and killed millions of cats, many millions, all over the world. And now, fast forward just a little bit more, that's not happening anymore. It certainly doesn't need to happen in most cases, Jackie.
No, it's really wonderful. And there is hope for cats that are afflicted with FIP and so many, many more diseases even. Anything that goes into keeping cats healthy and happy. We have supported research in nutrition, behavior, so many areas that really benefit cats all around. But FIP is certainly a success story and one we're very proud of having a part in.
You know, I was on the board when I would get emails, or it would be brought up at board meetings, that other veterinarians would say, why are you wasting your money on that? It can never be figured out. And here, fast forward to today, and it's been figured out. What's more? And there's more! The drug that was originally used to treat cats with feline infectious peritonitis, or FIP, happens to be called remdesivir. Now, when the pandemic hit, I happen to know that there are very few antivirals for us mere humans, or for animals for that matter, but there aren't many choices. Antibiotics, yes. Antivirals, not so much at all. I mean, really, you can count them on one hand. That's how few pretty much that there are. And the government said, what can we do? And looked at a report for cats with the feline cats with the feline coronavirus. And yes, cats are not people, but they did. They were, let's give it a try. Let's see what this drug, which really isn't for the feline coronavirus, what's more, it's for a disease that is sometimes caused by it, this immune-mediated disease called FIP. But let's see if it works. And it turned out to work in a clinical trial and quickly was put on the market. And today, because of cats getting FIP, because of the organization where you are the executive director and Dr. Niels Petersen, remdesivir was available, still is, for people who get sick with the human coronavirus during the pandemic with so-called COVID. And countless lives, thousands of lives and thousands have been saved by that one drug. I love that story, Jackie.
Isn't research amazing? It truly is.
Yeah, and on this very radio station, on this very radio show, I had the opportunity to tell Dr. Fauci that story. And he knew some of it. He knew a bit of the history about remdesivir, of course, but he didn't know about the organization we're talking about. He hadn't heard of Dr. Niels Petersen. And there really is a One Health connection, I think, that is somewhat untapped between cats and people. What do you think?
I think it really proves that, you know, you have to use your forward thinking. You have to take that leap of faith, and you have to believe in health research because we are all connected. So it just, you know, just learning as much as we can help one another and our cats.
Yeah. Now, the number one killer of adult cats between the age of about 2 to 3 to the age of about 10 or 11 or 12, when kidney disease begins to take over, cancers take over as well, is actually a kind of heart disease called feline hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And that kind of heart disease, Jackie, there is amazing news about that touches my heart. And I will let you tell that story and also explain that all of you, if you are so inclined to learn more, can learn more about it at an upcoming event you can attend in person or virtually. We'll tell you about it for sure when we come back on WGN. Jackie Atchicola, she is the executive director of the Every Cat Health Foundation. Before we tell the story about heart disease and cats, Jackie, I'm curious, you've been the executive director now for several years. What touches you the most about this nonprofit organization and the difference? I mean, so many people don't know about this organization yet. I would argue that the difference this one organization has made for cats easily surmounts any other efforts that have been made to support cat health.
Well, Every Cat Health Foundation really touches me because we are dedicated to the mission of cat health research and helping cats worldwide on a global scale, all cats, my cats, your cats, cats in other countries besides the United States. There are cats everywhere, and they're all important to each other and to their people. And the fact that the research that we support and that you support can impact all of our lives, that is what really draws me to Every Cat Health Foundation. And we can see the difference from year to year and decade to decade. We're almost a 60-year-old organization, and the fact that we have been focused has really paid off for cats.
No question, cats are living longer than ever before. Lots of reasons for that. Certainly the fact that they're kept greatly in the United States, anyway, indoors. Certainly nutrition is better overall. However, it is the medical care that's available for cats, too. And that falls under the purview and behavioral medicine as well. So I joined this organization over 20 years ago. I had a cat that some of you on this radio station may recall named Ricky. I remember Ricky, our piano-playing cat, once came in to the Steve and Johnny show when Steve and Johnny were on overnights. And we brought our little piano because, after all, Ricky played that little piano and did a little concert on the radio. And then Steve and Johnny were asking me a question. How did you teach your cat to play the piano and those sorts of things? And we're chit-chatting, and Ricky feels comfortable. He felt very comfortable. This was over 20 years ago. He felt very comfortable walking around the studio or being out and about wherever he was. And he walks over the console. Oh, my gosh, I shouldn't say this on the air because the boss may be listening. He walks over the console, and whatever he did, some buttons were pressed, dials were moved, and we were thrown off the radio. We were thrown off the air by our cat. And Steve King, being the ultimate professional he did, didn't blink an eye. He pressed that button over there, that button over there. And within 3 seconds, hi, we're back. You know, it was so seamless because it was Steve and Johnny. But I will tell you, this cat was everywhere, not only in the Chicago area at Petco and PetSmarts, but on national television. Because at that time, people didn't. Now it's a little different. And you have YouTube, which hadn't existed yet. But at that time, people didn't teach their cat to play the piano. Cats didn't go, and lots of other things too. If you had five little kids that could line up and lay down, he'd jump over one, then jump over another, and another, and another. If dogs could do a downstay, he'd jump over one, then jump over another, and another, and another, and all sorts of things. And that in its day was just incredible. But Ricky was diagnosed with the most common heart disease in cats, feline hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. It is the number one cause by far of sudden death in cats. Lots of other ways that any cat can die of this disease, but that's how Ricky passed away. And I began a fund because I thought, you know what, something's got to be done. This is so common. And today we now know, due to the research we have funded, a lot about the disease, including that often one out of every eight cats may suffer, adult cats, from HCM. That's a short term for this disease. And that's shocking. That's ridiculous. And not every cat will die of it, but many, if not most, do. So we now have answers. Answers that, I'll tell you, Jackie, I was hoping for this for the last 20 years. And it's like, for me personally, a dream come true. And we're going to be talking about those answers and much more coming up soon, right?
Absolutely. And a lot of these efforts are indeed thanks to you and in Ricky's memory. And we're so grateful for that. Every Cat Health Foundation has actually funded 38 HCM-related studies over the last 23 years. The need for continued research goes on, but we're very excited as we're focusing on future and therapies that are just on the verge of being available.
Yeah. And tell me about the event at North Carolina State.
Yes. April 26th and 27th, we are having a symposium called Health Breakthroughs for Every Cat, focusing on future therapies for feline heart disease and beyond. And this is at the NC State College of Veterinary Medicine, or it's available virtually as well. And you can find out more about that at everycat.org.
And it's not expensive to attend either in person. If you may be expensive to get to Raleigh, North Carolina, I don't know. But the actually going inside the building isn't expensive, and it's not expensive for sure, and easy enough to attend virtually, I think. Is that true, Jackie?
It is. It is easy to attend any way you would like. For veterinary professionals, there is CE available. And for pet parents, there is just oodles of information that will be shared.
Yeah. I mean, this disease, heart disease in cats, has touched so many cats. And to think now that the Food and Drug Administration Center for Veterinary Medicine has approved a medication that can successfully truly treat this disease is like one of the best things that's happened in my lifetime, truly, because this was a goal for me. Now, people may want to keep up with what's going on in cat health in general, and we have a way for folks to do that, don't we?
We have several ways. Site everycat.org, that there's a link on there to sign up for a newsletter. We also have information if folks would like to volunteer in their area on our behalf, on behalf of cats. So we have all kinds of information. We have webinars periodically, so we just hope to engage. And you can send us an email if you have a specific question at info@everycat.org.
Yeah, and to be clear, the newsletter and those webinars are, it's all my favorite four-letter word, free, and that is a good thing. You do great things. I am so proud to be a small part of this organization. Jackie Acciacola, once again, everycat.org. Thank you so much for joining us. So what do dogs know? Do they know when we say, good boy or good girl, that we're talking to them and that we're saying something positive to them? So here's what was done in this sort of study, unofficial, unpublished study, and all these video montages of all these people saying good boy or good girl to their own dogs. Their dogs actually smiled. So yes, dogs do smile, by the way. But do they understand exactly what we're saying? Is it more how we say it? Which greatly is true. It is more how we say it. But each and every dog, 100%, responded when their person said, good boy or good girl. Just interesting, though not necessarily surprising. Susan Burrows is the program coordinator for Rainbow Animal Assisted Therapy. I will tell you, this organization changes lives, human lives, sometimes saves lives quite literally, and it is the largest program of its kind in the Chicago area, one of the larger ones in the country. Susan, first of all, welcome to WGN as always, and tell me about Rainbow Animal Assisted Therapy.
Well, thank you for inviting us to talk with you today. Rainbow was founded in 1987, and it's a not-for-profit, all-volunteer corporation and the oldest and largest organization of its type in the Chicago metropolitan area. We do 250 visits a month throughout Chicago in various facilities, and our certified therapy dogs and their handlers interact with nearly 40,000 individuals in a given year.
Wow. Now, where you said how many visits, but where do you visit? What do you do? What do the dogs do?
Well, rainbow dogs are trained both in visitation, which is most people's idea of what a therapy dog does. They interact with people and be petted and walked and brushed. We also do animal-assisted therapy, which facilitates learning or healing or rehabilitation in a therapeutic setting. So some of the types of facilities we visit are medical centers, hospitals, rehabilitation places, libraries, schools, some residential areas. We do. We have special relationships with law enforcement and first responders, the USO, park districts. We do pretty much a lot, pretty much where people ask us to come. We do a lot of different kinds of facilities.
All right. So one of the things that I want to kind of put this in simple terms is that, for example, a dog may visit a library. That dog may just have to sit and look pretty as the child reads a story to the dog, who, of course, is not going to judge the reading or the extent of that reading. That's kind of passive. It's important, very important. The other kind is where a medical professional actually directs. So let's say a gunshot victim wound, of which there have been too many, wants to move an arm. And actually, physical therapy gets really tough and really boring, I hear, very fast. However, with a dog in the room, it can be another story. So literally holding a tennis ball can be a challenge in of itself, and then tossing it to the dog. It's directed therapy by a medical professional. Have I described those two types of dogs correctly, Susan?
Yes. When we're talking about medical settings, the use of animal therapy is an additional modality to aid in healing and recovery. So just the interactions with patients, they have benefits of comfort, of lowering their blood pressure, reducing pain, stress, anxiety, depression, increasing their morale. But in a more complex unit, such as rehabilitation, the dogs are used in a therapeutic setting to accomplish goals. So a person that had a stroke or a child that maybe had orthopedic surgery may be reluctant to do physical therapy or occupational therapy, but they will do activities with the dog. So the medical professional is using the dog as another modality of treatment.
Now, what's really interesting to me is, I don't know, some number of years ago, if you were to describe all this to me, we'd have listeners saying, a dog? A dog doing this? And medical professionals often said that. We're not allowing dogs in our program, in our facility. Today, I believe, Susan, it's almost completely reversed, that there is a need for these dogs. The facilities greatly want the dogs. Science at this point has shown over and over and over and over again, not to mention what people have seen with their own eyes, the difference the dogs make, and there's actually a need for more dogs. The demand is there, but it's the reverse. There aren't almost, or maybe literally, enough dogs to fill that need.
The demand is great, especially if we're talking, well, in schools too, but hospitals, there, it's an optimal use of treatment for patients, and the demand is great for more and more services. We cannot meet the demand in the Chicago area. We are always looking for ways to increase our membership, train more dogs, because it has become proven through studies that dogs can aid people in ways that are unique and effective. So there is a great need for dogs to help. It may be inexplicable. I think it's because of the eons of relationship between dogs, in particular, and humans. They're our oldest domesticated animal, and they connect in a way with human beings. So that in therapy, it's a mutually nurturing relationship that helps people accomplish different goals.
We literally have only 1 minute before we break. And by the way, when we come back from the break, I want to talk about how your dog may be able to become a rainbow dog. So many times, I know I've witnessed little miracles, sometimes big miracles, happening right in front of my eyes. Can you give me an example?
I was with a child who was in a wheelchair, and that child refused to get out of the wheelchair, would not walk. And the goal of using the dog was to entice the child to get up, use their braces, and walk a few steps. The child wanted to hold the dog's leash. The dog got up. My dog got up. Abby walked to the end of the leash, turned around, and the little girl walked to Abby. Abby got up, walked to the end of the leash, turned around, and the little girl walked again. The child and the dog walked across an entire gym more than she had ever walked before. And it was the relationship she had and connected with the dog and the dog's encouragement that enabled her to do that.
Were there tears in the eyes of family members?
There usually is tears whenever you go into those kind of interactions. Yeah, there are tears.
Yeah. Are you still amazed at what dogs can do just by being dogs?
we can't always even explain how the dogs know. They can go into a room of people and they will single out the person that is having the most trauma and go to them and offer them comfort. And how dogs know that, I can't answer that.
I can't either, but we can answer how your dog may be able to become one of these heroic dogs. And it's not only the dogs. The dogs don't generally drive themselves to the program. So it's the people involved, too. And we'll explain when we come back on WGN. Susan Burrows, the longtime program coordinator of Rainbow Animal Assisted Therapy, nationally known organization based right here in Chicago, serving Chicago and suburbs. All of your programs added up, how many are there?
Well, we interact with approximately 90 facility partners. That's ongoing programs. But it's probably about 150, 170 ongoing programs. And
wow.
Then we do a lot of one-time kind of things.
So no wonder why you can use some dogs, because that's a lot of programs. So let's say I adopted a dog from a shelter or rescue. Can be 4, 5, 6, 7, even 8 or 9 years old. Can that dog, in theory, become a rainbow dog? What I'm asking, does it need to be a puppy?
We do not test or train puppies. The dog has to be between the ages of 1 and 8 years old. It needs to have lived with its handler for 6 months, so it can be in rescue or raised as a puppy or whatever, but it has to have been in the same household for 6 months. And the secret to being a good therapy dog is the dog's temperament. So you look at your dog and you say, is my dog eager to meet new people? Does he enjoy being petted? Does she have good manners? And if she enjoys being out with people and enjoys, going out to new experiences, or he's very well behaved, and that's a way for you to say, I think maybe my dog would be a good dog to see if they can enjoy being work in a therapy situation. And the key is the dog. The dog is your partner, so you're always going to ask the dog, is it good for you, what we're doing? And if it enjoys it and enjoys that situation, then that dog may be able to be a dog that would like working in a therapeutic environment, in a school or library or park district. Or there's so many different ways that a dog can contribute.
How important is basic training? I'm not talking about a Mensa dog necessarily having to know tricks, like 30, 50 of them. I'm talking about very basic training, and also related to that, the bond that the dog has with the person at the other end of the leash.
Well, we expect the dog to have good manners and mastered basic obedience skills and commands, such as walking politely on a loose leash or following the commands to sit down, stay, and come before taking the class. Because our therapy classes are not obedience classes. They're teaching the handler and the dog how to work in a therapy situation. So we expect the dog, again, to have good manners and to listen to their handler.
Is there any type of dog that you don't accept? I'm talking about any breed.
No, any breed, any specific dog within any type of breed can be a therapy dog. Again, it depends on the individual dog. Some dogs, based on their breed characteristics, lead themselves into one type of dog activity over another. So some dogs, I have Cavaliers. Cavaliers have been bred for centuries to be what they called comfort spaniels. They make excellent therapy dogs because that's part of their characteristics. But there's no dog that may not be a therapy dog. It just depends on the individual dog itself.
Right. You look at the individual, not the breed or suspected
right.
breed that dog is. Tell me about the dog apprehension program, because I think this is fascinating.
Rainbow, and it's about 18 years, 17, 18 years that we've had our dog apprehension program. The dog apprehension program is for children who have an extreme fear of dogs. So the classes create an environment where children with a fear of dogs feel acknowledged and supported so that they can develop tools to feel safe in the presence of dogs. It empowers the children with tools to help control their fear. But we also tailor the therapy to the needs of each child. So each child has an individual educational plan, so to speak. And we're not teaching the kids to have a dog or love dogs. The goal is that they won't run out into traffic because they see a dog on the sidewalk.
Now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
We recently had two sisters graduate, and their goal was to get a puppy. I mean, they came in terrified of dogs and very uncomfortable, and at the end they said, you know what, I think we're going to get a family dog, their parents said. But the goal is to teach the kids how to handle those fears so that it empowers them so that they can control their environment.
I think this is a wonderful program for all sorts of reasons. I mean, you're giving kids more confidence in general, which is a good thing in life. But also, you're going to encounter, whether you like it or not, dogs everywhere. And having a phobia, just not a hesitancy about dogs, but having a true fear of dogs, that limits what you can do in life, you know? So, not to mention that, okay, now maybe, like you're describing, some of these people will actually get a dog. And I argue that living with the dog changes one's life in a positive way. Susan, with our 2 minutes left, if you're interested in your dog becoming a rainbow dog, what steps can people take? Or to learn more about the dog apprehension program?
They can contact Rainbow at our website, rainbowaat@gmail.com, or call 773-283-1129. We have dog introduction to animal assisted therapy classes starting in Streamwood on March 17th. There's still openings at the Pet Supplies Plus out there, so you can get information about that. But we offer our therapy classes all year round.
All right. Very good.
Location.
Yeah, because we slid by that date already, but the fact that you offer them all year round is important. I want to repeat that phone number, 773-283-1129. And the website again is?
rainbowaat.org.
Okay. All right. RainbowAAT as an animal assisted therapy.org. Susan, I happen to know the work this organization does, unheralded, without enough publicity from my perspective. I mean, listen, if there's a bad dog bite that happens somewhere and someone is seriously hurt or worse, it makes the news. Maybe it should. I don't argue that. But the work you do, actually, lives are changed, saved. I mean, the work every single day the Rainbow Animal Assisted Therapy dogs do doesn't make the news. I suggest, well, maybe it should make the news. Anyway, it made the radio on WGN. Thank you so much for all the amazing work that you and all of the volunteers do at Rainbow. Thank you, Susan. Zoos have been doing this for a very long time, and it's about time the pet parents begin to, and they have begun to, enrich the environment for all of our dogs and cats and other pets. Provide opportunities to do what the animal was born to do. For example, for cats. Cats were all born, if it's a cat, with a prey drive. The need to actually search, seek out, and then hunt, and then kill their food. And even if it's from a food puzzle, put in different places around the house. This gives indoor cats an opportunity to do that. All dogs were bred to do something. And while you may not have sheep in your backyard, you might have a frisbee disc that you can toss at the dog. And in a sense, that's an opportunity to use their herding drive. More on this on my website, stevedale.tv. Talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.